Session number 9751, reel 5.
Mr. Frank Ray in reel 5. We were talking about the rations that were brought up, and you were mentioning you couldn't heat them. Could you make a fire at all, or did you ever attempt to make a fire?
No, we wouldn't do that. You wouldn't. I don't suppose we'd have been allowed to, but we certainly never made. We weren't attracting attention by making
a quiet sector like Bowman Hamill at that time.
No, we couldn't. No, I never remember a fire.
Did you have things like the Tommy cookers, little things for heating without smoke?
No, we hadn't anything. I'll tell you what we have overlooked there, the rum ration.
I was just coming on to it, yes.
Well, now then, I've told you we weren't ordinary. And I wasn't an ordinary soldier, but as I didn't like rum, I couldn't take it. I also didn't want to die a drunken hero, because that rum did all sorts of extraordinary things to them, you know. It altered the complexion altogether of a man. Some of them wanted to go and fight all alone, you see. Let's get at them stuff. Well, I had a flask, and this flask, whoever brought the rum round, an officer and a sergeant, instead of tipping mine into a little carry-on and swinging it, the filled me rum flask. And during the night, the sergeant, or whoever was in charge, used to come round and never say a word, just come and stand to me. He said, "Jove, it's a nasty night, it's a bit cold, isn't it?" He'd come for his little tip of rum, and they tipped the officer that I wouldn't drink it, that I kept it for emergencies, you see. And the officers invariably fell in, because I never remember being refused and having this rum flask filled. And the sergeants used to come along periodically during the night and have a little nip.
That was just the sergeants that did that, not the
officers? Well, anybody that I knew could always have a nip as long as it was there. And I never knew one of them that took advantage, that, say, tipped it back and swigged it. They just had a little nip, everybody.
How quickly did you start doing it? Had you started doing that?
Started that straight away. I think I started that the first time we were there, because I had this flask. I might not have done, might have been second or third time, but I know it was early
but
on.
They trusted you, then?
Oh, yes.
Did any men, you say that some men wanted to be
trusted
drunk?
Me, I couldn't take the damn stuff, it upset me. They were safe enough, I hated the smell and the stink of it. But I only started once and it all came back on me, and I said, never again would I touch that.
You say that some men became what you call drunken heroes, or wanted to be there. How did they get enough rum to be drunk in the front line?
Oh, it was, you got the ration, which was perhaps equivalent to an egg cup full. But it was very potent, and I mean, you were standing there on an empty tummy, you see. And they swigged this stuff down, it immediately came back. It was very powerful.
You could see a visible change in them after
that. Oh, good gracious, yes. It was really dangerous to a lot of people.
Did any of them ever do anything silly in your sight while after they'd taken the rum?
No, they were generally restrained. But I remember my great friend, Broomhead, we mentioned him earlier, that's the chappie I went into business with in later life. He used to, oh, now, there I'm wrong, because I used to give him my ration. That would be up to July 1st when he was wounded. So it didn't happen in the first instance.
That's all right. You were allowed to give him your ration, were you?
Well, it was given to me. I could do what I liked with it. But the second ration, I remember him. I remember the minute he started, and he had a high-pitched voice. He used to get these two rations, and his voice used to go high, and he started to shout. And so I said to him, look, I said, if you don't contain yourself, I'm going to cut this off. If you can't carry this stuff properly, you're not going to get any. And that's when I started with the flask. Yes, he was the one that started. So I wouldn't start with the flask until after until I got to Neuve-Chapelle, after the Somme.
After he'd left?
After he'd left, yes.
That's all right, that's clear.
Yes.
You say they had to be restrained sometimes. What would they want to do?
Let's get at them over the top and go and charge them.
This was during normal...
Yes. Oh, yes, there were several... Whether they would have done it or not, or whether it was sort of bolstered up bravado, I don't know.
Were there many teetotalers handing on their rum ration to...
Nobody else. That was the only one that I ever knew. I mean, I wasn't a teetotaler. I just didn't like the stuff. Oh, no, there were most of them. Lived for it.
In what way?
Well, it had been cold, horrible night. You know, now out you start... start going through it all night and you're outside, it's a long, weary night, you know.
What about cigarettes?
Well, there was a ration of cigarettes, but I didn't smoke either.
What would you do with your ration then?
Oh, give them to somebody. Perhaps I didn't bother to collect them. Plus, quite a lot of the chaps had their own cigarettes sent home from England. They didn't like the ration cigarettes. That fancy names.
A lot of people started to smoke, I believe, during their time in the trenches. Were you ever tempted to start?
No. I would have the odd cigarette, I know, but also that didn't appeal to me much.
Why would you have the odd cigarette? When would you have them?
A bit bored, I suppose. Nothing happening.
What about, we're still on supplies, really. How did you get your, if you did any damage to your uniform or to your equipment, how did you get your ammunition supply replenished? How were all those things taken care of when you were in the front line?
Oh, well, we're done with working parties, you know. Now, the first thing I did when I got to the front line was have a look at the bombs. There'd be two or three...
We'll come to that, because I really mean about your equipment.
I suppose if you damage your equipment when you were in the line, you'd have to wait till you went out to get another reissue. There was never anything short like that.
And what about personal ammunition?
Well, we carried 120 rounds with us, you know, and you very seldom fired a shot. He said, don't start shooting, he'll shoot back.
I'll come to that. Now, looking at sort of thinking particularly of the Bowman Hamel sector before the Somme started,
yes.
What were general sanitary arrangements? Would you be able to wash at all, or would you not, in the line? Would you have enough water to spare for that, or be able to get any?
You didn't wash. You were only in 4 or 5 days, you know. You didn't wash. If you were that way inclined, you would save a drop of tea to lather your face, to shave. But
that was because it was warm, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. But I hadn't any kind of beard. I think I could go 5 days normally without a shave.
Were you supposed to be clean-shaven in the line?
Oh, they liked you to be clean. They didn't like it yet scruffy.
In the line?
In the line, even. There's extras good for morale.
What about your buttons and things like that? Were you supposed to keep them clean?
Oh, you put muck over the top of them for fear they glinted. Yes.
So they didn't carry it to extremes?
No. No, that, well, after the Boer War, when they fitted them out with red.
You mentioned earlier. What about latrines? Now, you'd been slightly embarrassed with your latrine arrangements in camp life. How were the latrines organised at Beaumont Hamel in the front line?
Oh, be behind the front line. There'd be a way cut through, you see, to it, and they were just there, just behind the front line.
What sort of arrangements did they have?
Oh, just a hole and a plank and a bit of canvas around. You didn't linger, you know.
Could you explain why not?
Aye, for fear he sent any shells over. You didn't want to be caught with your pants down.
Was that seen as a particularly inglorious death or something, or was that the reason?
Well, it would have been in court there. My sights was cold as well. They weren't heated. You got in there and got out as soon as possible.
Did they supply paper and things like that?
No. You got your own. Yes.
Were the latrines strictly enforced? In other words, would you always go to the latrine? Could you go anywhere in principle?
You could go anywhere in principle behind. It wasn't used, but I don't know if they thought of anything else but going there.
So you could go just in the side of the trench, could you? Or was that stopped?
You wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't. Never thought of it.
What about other waste disposal? I'm thinking of the tin cans and just the rubbish.
Just threw them over the top. Yes. You threw them generally at the back of the trench, because we would use the front of our trenches more than he would, and you didn't like kicking them in the dark for fear he heard you coming or anything, you see. Sometimes it varied, you know, the distance. Sometimes you were a quarter of a mile off.
Well, how far were you at Beaumont Hamel?
I think maybe 300 yards.
Yes. Now, you mentioned you had these bugs on board the boat. During this first period at Beaumont Hamel, did you have any problem with lice?
Oh, yes. Started straight away in France.
What was the nature of the problem?
Well, you couldn't get your clothes off, you see, if you had your clothes on for 5 days. And of course, that bred them. Yes.
What were the symptoms?
Well, it was generally at the seams of your trousers. And when possible, if we could, we used to, not in the trenches, but just take our trenches off, light a cigarette, and run the cigarette up them, you see. Burn them to death. But they got better later on. They got, somebody invented steam cans, and they used to put them in these cans and just kill them off like that. Kept them under control.
Did you mind having lice?
God, it was horrible. It was one of the mice and rats were one of the minor horrors of war that these people that called themselves soldiers never dreamt about.
You mentioned mice and rats. Were these a problem before the Somme opened in that front? Did you have mice and rats in the front line?
No mice. The rats had eaten them. No.
Before the 1st of July, would there be rats? Or?
Oh, yes. Always in the trenches. But I never heard of one instance where anybody was bitten by a rat. We didn't take a lot of notice, you know. Get out, you bugger. As a matter of fact, my wife's brother was in our company, and he was a chap, a nature chap. And he had a little estate up here, 2 acres of land and a bird sanctuary and that sort of thing. He was very good with a catapult. And of course, some chaps, when they were on night watch on the front fire step, used to put a bit of cheese on the end of the bayonets, and a rat came along and they used to shoot it. That was done frequently. But he was good with a catapult, he could hit them.
Did you go hunting rats, or...?
Just on one occasion, but I had a dog with me.
When was that?
It was in a filthy place when we returned to the Somme from Neuve-Chapelle. Neuve-Chapelle and Festubert were dry, and it was good weather, you see. It was the summer.
Right, I've made a note of that, and I'll pick that up then, to keep it in chronology. But you say the rats didn't frighten you at all. Was that right from the beginning, you weren't bothered by them, or did you just...
Well, we were bothered by them. I mean, when we went to sleep, you pulled your ground sheet over your head. But you could sometimes feel them running over the ground sheet. But I never heard of anybody being bitten.
Did they try and get any food you had? Because you had your whole 24 hours ration.
Well, that kept them. There'd be waste food, you know. And I'm afraid we weren't instructed too much in that. And they would crawl in the tins and get what was left in tins, you see. There's always a certain amount of...
What about the rest of your ration, you know, because you didn't eat it all at once, did you? So you had sort of 24
well,
hours worth.
Kept it in your haversack.
And they couldn't get in there?
Well, they could, but you were wearing them. You were carrying the haversack about with you.
You say the rats had eaten the mice. Did you know that?
No, it's just something I never saw a mouse.
What about... this was a fairly quiet sector at the time, Bowman Hamel. Would there be any dead bodies in between the lines or in the parapets or buried nearby? Were they a problem there?
No. We had very few casualties before the Somme.
So there were none in No Man's Land?
Well, they were waiting for the Somme. They knew something was happening. And you didn't fire, they didn't fire.
I'll come to that. Now, it was March, moving into April, fairly cold and wet months sometimes. What was the weather like in that, as you waited for the Somme those 3 months?
Well, I reckon it would be no different from England. Same cold, wet, snow sometimes.
Did it have an effect on you? I mean, you were for 5 days out in the front line with only cubby holes. Did it affect you?
Not the least. Never affected me. I never was on sick in my life. And the army until late on.
Did any of the ailments associated with bad weather, such as frostbite, trench feet or trench fever or dysentery, did any of those surface at this time?
No, we never had anything like that. When I hear today of football teams getting a virus, I wonder what the hell happens to them. What are they made of? I had there for well over 4 years. I can never remember any of my friends going on sick.
So you didn't have any problem with trench feet or anything like that?
Well...
Or not at that time, anyway.
I've seen feet, you know, if you steep your hands for a long time, how funny they go. I've seen feet like that, but they started... they issued us with whale oil. And we had to, and socks, fresh socks would come up the line, you see. You change your socks, rubbed your feet in whale oil, put your new socks on. But of course the trouble always was getting dry Wellingtons. And they were thigh boots, they weren't sort of ordinary Wellingtons.
Was this sort of precaution necessary at Bowman Hamel?
Yes. It was. There was a lot of mud and stuff.
Even before the battle started?
Oh, yes.
I'd like now to look at sort of things in slightly different way. Take a daily routine in the front line at that time.
Yes.
So that we can go through some other aspects of life then. If we could start it with stand two. This is talking about front line before the Somme opened.
Yes.
Would you have a stand two every morning?
Every morning, oh yes, stand two.
And what did it consist of?
Well, you just woke up and were lively and were ready for anything that could happen.
Were you actually put up on the parapet?
Not necessary, no. There was never any more put on the parapet than was necessary in normal times. For fear he had a sniper at you, you see.
So stand to was just a matter of being awake.
That's all.
And alert.
Because, presumably, that was the fixed time that they had in the minds, that if anything were to happen, it would happen at stand to.
Now, could you run through some of the front line, what you'd do during the day? Actual...
Loafed or nothing. Didn't do anything. You probably try to get yourself cleaned up a little bit and... But it was often better in the line than it was out if you were out in reserve.
I'll come to that because I want to talk about working parties.
Yes.
So you would just... You wouldn't have any duties to do during the day?
No, not apart from... You might... have the trenches to patch up and clean up a little bit. Try and keep them respectable.
But
if there were any shells that come over, they often blew the trench in, you know. You had that to renovate.
What about meals? When would you choose your own meal times?
Yes.
And would you do as in conventional life? Would you have a breakfast, lunch and dinner? Or how would you arrange your eating habits yourself?
Just when you felt like it. Yes, I'm peckish or something. What have I got? And of course we got what our people could do, send us out in parcels, you see. Cake and whatnot, if they could.
You received those parcels in the front line?
Oh, you could, yes. We used to get them.
They brought them right up to the front?
Yes.
What would be in one of those parcels?
Well, I always remember when there was any cake, there was always a rush to see whether it was chocolate cake or ginger. And it's, hell, ginger. You see, we always were looking for chocolate cake. And... bits of things, really, we were better fed than our people at home.
Would you share when a parcel
always
came
up? With your immediate friends. Yes.
So, what would they be? There'd be a sentry assigned, presumably, or sentries. How many sentries would there be in your sector of the line during the day?
During the day, there's just one on the periscope.
Have you ever done... Did you ever do that?
Oh, yes.
And what was the job of sentry then, during this quiet period? What were they looking for?
Just had to watch, see there was nothing happening. There weren't any jerrys coming across or anything.
And what was your job if you saw anything?
Oh, well, I never did see anything, but of course you'd have given me the alarm.
How did you do that?
Shout. Yes.
Did you have any special duties at all during this period? I know later on you became a sniper, but at this time...
No, nothing.
How did you get through the day? Because it sounds as if you didn't have much to do.
Well, you'd been awake all night. You slept once if you could.
This would be in your cubbyholes, or...?
In cubbyholes or just sitting on the fire step.
Were there any what we'd call recreations at all to keep you amused, or was it just...
In the trench?
Yes, front-line trenches.
Nothing in the front.
Would you talk to each other?
Oh, yes. We were always friendly.
What sort of topic? I mean, you had all day when you weren't sleeping
God
to talk.
God knows. But you couldn't meet a nicer lot of chaps. I mean, I never in all my army life had anybody ever... accused. I never saw a fight or a disagreement between any. There was never any question of anybody if you left your present from home, your cake and whatnot, you'd bet your boots it would be there when you went back for it. There was nothing ever stolen.
So that was the day. Now, what would happen at night? You said you worked at night. Was the sentry rota the same at night? The duties of a sentry pretty well the same?
Well, there'd be a corporal with about six men, you see, and he would detail two at a time to keep watch. And the other four would... If they couldn't find any jobs for them, perhaps some would be on a ration party. And then there was, of course, the certain ones that the party had to go out and inspect the wire.
I'll come to that. Sticking just to the sentry, the sentry, would he actually use the periscope at night, or would they look over
no,
the top?
Oh, no, they're no good at night. No. Oh, yes, you have to be standing up at night.
Did you ever worry about machine guns traversing along the parapet and things
like
that?
Oh, my God, yes. The only thing was, you could generally beat it. If you knew where the machine gun was, you could see the machine gun fire. And you could duck before the bullets reached you. Yes.
What about staying awake? Was that a problem?
No, not a problem at night. I never remember the time you were too cold. Most times. Yes.
Now, we've discussed ration parties.
We were all tied up in sandbags and things, you know. Sandbags on your feet and on your legs.
What was that for?
Try to keep warm. Yes. Now, even in a summer night, you know, it's not too warm, or a night during the night when you're doing nothing.
Now, you said that you'd have the ration parties and... would you have a... You mentioned wiring parties. Were you ever on a wiring party that had to go out and inspect, or...?
Frequently.
This is from the front line. You'd
yes.
still have to go out.
But
you take me through a wiring party, what you'd do?
Well, there'd perhaps be 20 on it, and be given these rolls of wire, and of course there were those stakes in the ground, and all you're going... just going about... just rolling this wire anywhere...
There were still the ones you had to hammer in rather than the ones you screwed in.
The screwed in ones were most popular, yes, because they didn't make a noise. You had to be pretty careful because they frequently, under a wiring party, if he heard you, the machine gun opened out on you and you had to duck. But I'd begun to look after myself a little bit, and I generally volunteered for a covering party. Ahead of them out in no man's land to give warning if there were any Germans about, you see. I've been in a hole in the ground with a chap, and we've seen Germans, and we've said keep down, don't make a noise, and we've let them pass the length of this room off. We've just let them go.
Was that before the Somme, or is that later? I know it's difficult to put your finger...
Well, it would be mostly later, because really nothing much happened before the Somme.
But you'd still have wiring parties out, would you?
Oh, we had wiring parties.
You say you began to look after yourself. Had you started to look after yourself before the Somme, or is that a feeling that came in after that big attack?
Well, I always had an eye to myself first. And I had a peculiar ideas. I didn't want to be in authority, and I didn't like being bossed about. So when I got to be Lance Corporal, it just suited me, but I never will come to that.
That was after the...
Yes.
You say that you volunteered for covering parties. Why was that? Why was that better than...
Because you were down below. They couldn't hit you with a machine gun. You see, you were safer, and you weren't working, and you weren't going to tear your clothes.
Now, were there any other working parties that you'd have out from the front line troops? I know they came up from behind, but would the front line troops have any other jobs to do?
Just patrols.
Right, we'll move on to patrols now.
Yes.
Did you do reconnaissance patrols before the Somme?
Yes.
You went on them?
I can't remember going on one. No. People were picked for it, you see. No, I can't say I ever went on one then.
And I presume that you weren't on a fighting patrol or a raid either in that 3 months?
No.
So... the next thing I want to look at is really what you could call the day-to-day fighting at this period. Now, you said it was a quiet sector.
Yes.
And you also, twice, you mentioned that if you didn't fire at them, they didn't fire at you. How was that understood? How did people come to that conclusion, if you see what I mean.
It just happened. You see, if anybody wanted to be a bit aggressive, they'd be soon told to pack in.
Who by?
His neighbour or the NCOs or sergeant or...
Would that informal approach go as high as the officers, or was this something...
Oh, like... no, you never saw them. They were in the dugout, mopping up gin, I think. Oh. You very seldom saw an officer in the front line, you know.
So this was, as far as you were concerned, it was you, the troops, and the NCOs had decided that this was a quiet... You were going to keep it quiet,
God,
if you could.
Yes. Yes, the only ones that wanted to fire were people that weren't in it themselves. They're the only ones that wanted to get on with it.